I invite you to open your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 4 and also find the Song of Solomon and Ecclesiastes. I'll be reading from those as we go through the message. When I was walking in just a few moments ago, a young lady walked up to me and said, "My parents, Jim and Donna Price, are going to have their 50th wedding anniversary next weekend." I do believe God is still working miracles in America. And I want to start out today by giving Jim some special advice. There's a man named Eric who forgot his wedding anniversary. He got up that morning, he didn't have a present for his wife. She was livid. She said, "Before you go to work in the morning," she said, "there better be something in my driveway that goes from 0 to 200 in 6 seconds." So he went off to work that day, came back. The next morning, he got up early before his wife woke up and went to work. She had on her bathrobe. She went to the window. She looked out in the driveway, and there was a box out there, gift wrapped for their anniversary. She went outside in her bathrobe. She brought it back in. She opened it up, and it was a bathroom scale. I'll give everybody equal time today. God made man, and then he rested. 6 days he was working, then he rested. Then he made woman, and neither man nor God have rested ever since. You ever wondered why the mother of the bride often cries at her daughter's wedding? Because daughters usually marry somebody like their father. I want to share with you about building a solid foundation for a marriage. A study was released several years ago called The State of Our Union, The Social Health of Marriage in America. It was produced by the National Marriage Project, Rutgers University, conducted by two highly respected researchers, Dr. David Pineau and Dr. Barbara Whitehead, and here's what they said. Key social indicators suggest a substantial weakening of the institution of marriage in America. Americans have become less likely to marry. When they do marry, their marriages are less happy. Married couples face a high likelihood of divorce. Now, here's some just highlights they gave from their survey. As a couple's relationship, marriages are more likely to be broken by divorce than by death. Americans are living longer, marrying later, exiting marriage more quickly, and choosing to live together before marriage, after marriage, in between marriages, as an alternative to marriage. A growing percentage of American adults will never marry. Marriage is also quietly losing its place in the language. People like to talk about relationships, intimate partners, and significant others. The number of unmarried cohabitating couples in America has gone up 865% since the year 1960. They also found in their research, people who say their marriage is very happy has decreased by 61.9%. It's estimated that after 10 years, only 25% of first marriages are successful. The percentage of adults who are presently divorced has quadrupled since 1960. In the non-conservative Brookings Institution, it claims that the annual cost for a marital breakdown is $225 billion. Marriage and family expert Dr. Les Parrott said, "For every percentage point the divorce rate drops, the lives of more than 1 million children are positively impacted. Marriages survive and they thrive. They make a high cultural difference." So I want you to notice, first of all, this morning we want to talk about communication. I'm convinced that when a marriage fails, one of the key factors in that marriage failing is that a husband and wife just quit talking to each other. Time out. Y'all hold on just a second. Newsweek magazine did a study several years ago, and here's what they found out. They found out the average couple, listen to this, talks alone with each other 4 minutes per day. The average couple talks 4 minutes a day. The average couple... After we go through three of these, we go home, right? Okay. The average couple, let's just use this right here, okay? The average couple spends 30 hours a week watching television. Now listen carefully. If you're not talking to one another, you are not communicating. When you first dated, guys, when you would go out to eat with that girl, you would make sure you had focused, zoomed in eye contact. Now, I want you to watch this when you go to restaurants now. Couples that have been married a long time are just looking around at the restaurant, at the people that are there. They're just people watching, and they hardly ever say a word. But you can tell when there's a chiseled guy there and a good-looking girl, and they're just dating. They are honed in like there's not anybody else in the whole restaurant except the two of them. Now, communication, of course, includes talking. Now, you want to use your language to encourage each other, to compliment each other, to discuss issues peacefully without attacking each other. And as you get older, you need to give your mate even more encouragement. Delaney and I went to a senior adult 5.5-hour driving school the other day. We were seated there with 60 other senior adults at round tables. I looked at Delaney and I said, we're just rehearsing for lunch at assisted living. This is what it's going to look like. And the guy who was conducting the driving seminar, he said, listen carefully. He said, when you were chiseled, guys, and ladies, you were absolutely gorgeous, people would come up next to both of y'all and blow the horn. But said, at your age now, when somebody's blowing the horn, it's not because you're chiseled or because you're good looking. Your mate, the older they get, the more encouragement they need. Communication, and that includes investing time with one another. You'll find that in the Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 10 through 13. This is not just a suggestion on the part of the bride, just to go bird watching in that passage or flower gazing. Her whole idea is that they spend some time together. Christina Freeberg had what she thought was an essential routine with her husband. She said, I love to nag my husband. She said, I nagged him all the time about his diet. She said, I made him read nutrition articles. And she said, I also coached his driving, and I forced him to exercise. So she decided that one Valentine's Day, she'd do something different. So in the card, she said, I have a special gift for you. I am not going to nag you for 30 days. She said in the first 15 seconds, she had to bite her tongue. She said it was amazing what happened. When I kept my mouth shut, his driving got better. He subscribed to a nutrition magazine and worked out with his exercise every single day. At the end of the 30 days, he asked for an extension on his wife's gift for him. Communication includes touching. Listen to Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 6, chapter 8, verse 3. Let his left hand be under my head, and his right hand embrace me. She's talking about tender touches of her husband, and specifically about his physical affection. I read the other day about a couple who would fuss and fight. They were fussing and fighting for 50 years of marriage. Their children gave them a 50th wedding anniversary. When they did, they gave them a gift certificate to go see a counselor. They fussed about whether they're going to see the marriage counselor. So they finally went. You know, the lady didn't think it was her fault. Man didn't think it was his fault. And so when they sat down in there, they began to talk back and forth. The counselor was moderating, meterating. Finally, the counselor got up, went over and grabbed this man's wife, picked her up, and kissed her right in the mouth, and then put her back in the seat. He looked at the husband and said, she needs that 3 times a week. He said, I'll bring her in Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Some of you want the name of the counselor. Song of Solomon, chapter 7, verse 10 through 13. I am my beloved's, and his desires for me. Come, my beloved, let us go out into the country. Let us spend the night. Guys, this is an overnight trip. In the villages, let us rise early and go to the vineyards. Let us see whether the vine has budded and its blossoms have opened, where the pomegranates have bloomed. There I'll give you my love. The mandrakes have given forth fragrance, and over our doors are all choice fruits, both old and new, which I have saved up for you, my beloved. You know what she's talking about? A trip to the Biltmore at Christmas. That's what this is. This is an overnight trip. She wants a date. She's planning a surprise trip for her mate. Now, let me just give you a little hint. Every now and then, guys, here's a good idea for you. Why don't you just pick up a special card for your wife on no special occasion? Now, that's strange, isn't it? She'll think you're cheating on her, but don't worry about that. She'll get used to it. Here's something else you ought to do. When you're going to Walmart to buy your gasoline, going and buy bread and milk, just go by the cheap florist section, pick up a dozen red roses, fresh ones. She doesn't have to know that they're $5.99. You just tear that off, and you take it home and tell her that you love her, giving her roses for no special occasion. The other thing I want you to write down is this: consideration. Chapter 4 of Ephesians, be humble and be gentle. The New American Standard said, with all humility and gentleness. That's how we're to act towards one another. The word for gentleness is translated in Titus 3:2 as consideration. Be humble and considerate of your mate. Philippians 2:2. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than yourself. That is so important in a marriage. Last week, we had an exhilarating date on Friday on my day off. We went by Comcast, and I stood in line. Boy, I'm going to tell you, that's something that's just intimate. And I want to tell you, when we got through with that, we went to a little farmer's market and found some freestone peaches between here and Somerville, about that big around. Delane makes the best July jam you've ever tasted in your whole life. You just shout and just eat and just pull more biscuits out to smear it on. And then we went to Red Lobster to eat. And then after that, I went with my wife fabric shopping at Hobby Lobby. I'm going to tell you, that's exhilarating. I'm going to tell you what, I couldn't cut off a yard of material if my life depended on it. And those ladies that work there, they just take a piece of scissors and they, that looks like about 3 yards, and cut it right straight across there. Church members going by, well, hi, Dr. May. How are you? My husband wouldn't step foot in a Hobby Lobby. And I said, well, then I have to go up to the front to find somebody to cut a sample for us. And, you know, I've told people that women ask us questions, and they really don't want our opinion. They just want us to know how they feel. Okay? Is that right, guys? Bunch of wimps. Nobody said anything. And so we stayed in there a while. And then to top our dating off, we went Krogering. That'll finish you up for the day. You know, you're ready for a nap when you get through with that. But you know, I used to resent doing things like that. Now I figured out that's more time that we can be together, and that's the way I can be considerate of my wife. I'd hate to have to do those kind of things by myself every week. And notice what else here. He talks about the sweetness there, that there was when you dated, that seemed to evaporate after you get married. You know, a wife doesn't enjoy playing second fiddle to anything, not golf, fishing, not your hunting. She'll say, you know what, I think you're taking me for granted. In Romans chapter 12, verse 10, give preference to one another in honor, all the time being considerate to one another. I like what Gary Smalley said. He was having some problems in his marriage that he caused early on, And one day she said, "Gary, you speak more kindly and more sweetly to a total stranger than you speak to me, your own wife." That's an indictment. Billy Graham was asked years ago how he and his wife got along. Here's what he said. "We are happily incompatible." I like that. "Countless divorces are finalized on the pretense of irreconcilable differences, seeing each other as incompatible." Dr. John Gottman, professor emeritus of psychology at the University of Washington, in 2007, he was recognized as one of the 10 most influential therapists of the past quarter century. He studied thousands of couples and concluded couples that consistently practice the golden rule are more likely to stay together than couples that don't. His research shows that compatibility doesn't necessarily determine where a couple will stay together. And then he says a couple must avoid what he calls the four horsemen of an apocalypse in your marriage: criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. The winner of the Distinguished Scientist Award from the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists says, "Amazingly, we have found that it all comes down to a simple mathematical formula. No matter what style of marriage follows, you must have at least 5 times as many positives as negatives." Then courtship. You don't have to be very long, married very long, before you forget to date your wife. Yesterday I was filling up our little convertible at Kroger late in the afternoon. Delaney and I had phoned in a little meal at Outback, and I was taking my time getting there. I dropped the top down on the way up there, and you can tell it's me because this shines real hard when I pass by you. And so I got out of the car with the top down, went around to pump gasoline, and I'm on this side of the pump. There's somebody on the other side of the pump. I didn't pay any attention. About that time, a guy about this tall with a cap walks up, stands this close to me, and he says, "I like that car. In fact, that's the prettiest one I've ever seen. What's the year model?" I said, "Well, it's a 2007 with 25,000 miles on it." He said, "Man, I love that car. Well, I think I'm fixing to get carjacked." But he was smaller than me, and I kept my eyes on his hand. I was going to take him down. I've seen Barney Fife do that. I've seen him do that before. And so the kid's 23 years old. And so while he's standing there, he said, he goes to church up in Armurchie. He said, "And who are you? I have seen you before. What do you do for a living?" And I said, "Well, I work at Pleasant Valley South Baptist Church." He said, "What do you do there?" I said, "Well, I'm the senior pastor." He said, "I'm glad I ran into you. I want to ask you some questions." And I'm like, "Do what?" And so he said, "I'm actually kind of shy." I said, "No, you're not. You walked up to meet a total stranger." And here's what else he said. He said, "Hey, I'm going to a church up in Armurchie." And said, "I've met this girl up there." And he said, "Her birthday's tomorrow, and I bought her a card and a gift certificate." I'm going, "Dude, we're at Kroger pumping gas here." And so he says, "I'm going to ask her parents tomorrow if it's all right if I give her this birthday card and a gift card." He said, "Then I'm going back Wednesday night, and I'm going to ask her out." I said, "Well, what's your problem?" He said, "Well, she's 23. She works in the children's ministry out there." I said, "Well, what's the deal?" He said, "Well, will she break my heart?" This is the truth. I mean, do I have a sign on me that says, "Ask me"? And especially about dating, this is the best con job I ever did in my whole life with my own marriage. And so I looked at him, I said, "People are always going to let you down. Jesus never will." He said, "But, you know, if I get involved with her and we break up, I'll have to find another church." I said, "Well, dude, you can buy your gas at Walmart or Kroger. It don't make any difference." I said, "There's a lot of churches out here. That won't be the end of the world." He said, "But I've been praying that God would send me somebody." And he said, "I went the first time and I looked on the other end of the pew, and there she was." Now, this is the truth. I can't make this up. This is not an ambient dream here. an SUV drove up in front of me. And a lady got out and looked about 28 to 30 years old. And he looks up from his little cap. He said, "Now she's pretty good looking too, isn't she?" And I said, "Well, she's married." He said, "How you know she's married? She's driving an SUV, son. You don't mess with her." He said, "And I bet she'd break your heart too." I said, "Man," I said, "here's my card. Call me if you need me. I've got to pick up dinner for my wife. I've got to leave." And so when I drove off, he was driving off just waving from the driver's side. Now, he may be burglarizing my house while I'm at church today. But guys, listen very carefully. Don't stop dating your wife after you get married. Ecclesiastes 9:9, enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun. All your meaningless days, for this is your lot in life and in your toilsome labor under the sun. I read a publication not too long ago, and the lady said this. She said, the brain's biological response that occurs when we begin to feel romantically connected and say we're falling in love applies if you're age 15 or age 50. She said, know that such emotion has changed and that carefree adventure must eventually yield to the reality of daily responsibilities. And she suggested a definition for appropriate romance. She wrote, probably the best definition, paying attention to your partner's feelings and needs, not just today, but always. And she went on to say this in this article, tuning into your loved one's needs may be the most romantic thing you can do. This type of romance, she declares, brings out the best in us and will transform even your most mundane moments into treasured memories. Ladies and gentlemen, a simple dinner does not have to be expensive for you to be together. Go to a movie, but be careful what it is. I was shocked the other day. I wanted to go play golf. Now, watching me play golf is not a pretty sight. And Delaine said, "Can I just go ride with you? That way I can just be." I said, "Darling, you don't want to watch me play golf. It's not like those guys on television." She said, "No, I want to be with you. Take flowers even when it's not Valentine's Day." And ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing wrong with blessing your parents by letting them keep the grandchildren for 2 to 7 days. So just the two of you can go on vacation. You don't always have to go on vacation with family and friends. Then commitment. Malachi 2:16. I hate divorce, says the God of Israel. I hate the violent dismembering of the one flesh of marriage. So watch yourselves. Do not let your guard down. Don't cheat. Don't be unfaithful in your marriage. Now, ladies and gentlemen, lots of you have been affected by divorce. Divorce is serious, but it is not the unpardonable sin. There's hardly a family within the sound of my voice that will hear me here, or maybe 500 or 600 that click on our podcast every week, that your home is not touched by divorce. I have a brother who's finishing up his fourth marriage. He's in the middle of a divorce. His divorce is not final, and he's already dating a secretary of a divorce attorney before his divorce is official. I don't understand all that. But if you're going to have a good marriage, let me tell you something. That word divorce ought to be like profanity in your home. So many people threaten, if you don't do this, we'll divorce. Listen, do you know what holds your marriage together? It's not love, because love is an emotion and it runs hot and cold. There are days you can't wait on your husband to get home so you can embrace him. And there are other days you don't care if he ever comes home again. Commitment is what holds it together. It's being willing to be unhappy for a while until you can work things out. And then center your marriage on Christ and his principles. Ephesians 4:1 says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, entreat you to walk in a manner worthy of the call in which you've been called. Paul said, yes, he was a prisoner of the government, but he says, I'm a prisoner of the Lord. He was sold out to God, and I encourage you. He says, I beg you to walk as a Christian. Live your life the way a Christian should live in your marriage. Listen to Psalm 127, verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Ladies and gentlemen, we need the Lord, God, as the one in charge of our marriage. How do we let the Lord build the house? He says, and let the Lord build the house, they labor in vain who build it. Practically, how does a husband and wife do that? Well, lots of couples go to church. That's part of putting Christ at the center of marriage. Get involved in a Bible study class. Fastest growing class in our church right now, Sunday school class, Dennis and Rena Drummond, they're teaching couples in their 20s and their 30s. And they're doing life together. And they're growing quickly. Get involved in Bible study. Let me ask you this. When's the last time you prayed with your spouse? You need to pray together. You say, I really don't know how to pray. Listen, you talk to your Heavenly Father with respect, just like you would your earthly father. Jesus is to be the Lord of your house. Ecclesiastes 4:12, a cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. You need Christ and the spouses together. Many, many years ago, Johnny Carson hosted The Tonight Show. Those of you who are young can ask your great-great-grandparents about that. One night, he had an 8-year-old boy as his guest. Little boy went to Sunday school and church. He was a Christian. And the reason why Johnny Carson had him on the show was because in his hometown of West Virginia, where there were coal mines, this little boy had rescued two people who were trapped in a coal mine. So he brought him on the show, and Carson said, now, do you attend Sunday school? He said, yes, sir. He said, what are you learning in Sunday school? He said, well, last week, our lesson was Jesus went to a wedding and turned the water into wine. You know, Johnny Carson loved that. He said, everybody was laughing. So Carson tried to keep a straight face, and he looked at him and said, well, what did you learn from that story? And here's what the boy said, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what I learned. He said, if you're going to have a wedding, make sure you invite Jesus. Stephen Curtis Chapman, most of you know him, world-renowned Christian musician, has won 5 Grammys and more Gospel Music Association Dove Awards than any other artist in history. In his autobiography, he's very transparent, and he talks about his parents banned the word divorce in their relationship, but he said it didn't last. He said it became an option for them, and he said it caused some problems for him growing up. He said, one thing that I've done as a tradition for our wedding anniversary with my wife, he said, Christ, the husband and wife, he said, I always give her 3 roses because it takes Christ, a godly husband and a godly wife, to keep a marriage strong. He said, we understood the best marriages are not 2 people, but 3. And it is the one in the center who holds it all together. He said, I do it every year on the anniversary, occasionally at other times, just as a reminder, we're in this together with God. What great theology. When I was about 10 years old, my dad said, son, you and your brother are going to work. I don't think we had child labor laws when I was growing up. He bought both of us little 3.5 horsepower push mowers. They had little Tecumseh Indian motors. Some of you remember that. They were not self-propelled. So we had to go up and down the street asking people if we could be their lawn care service. And Daddy said, don't ever set a price. Let the customer set the price. That's the dumbest thing I ever did in my life. An acre, $2 with a push mower. There was a little couple up the street. They didn't have any children. O.C. and Mr. Harley, F.A. Miss O.C. was a little tiny lady. I don't remember where she worked. But Mr. Harley was crippled. He had had polio. He had big steel braces on him. He could barely get around. And he worked somewhere for a long time until he went out on disability. That was one of my yards. They were the most picky people I ever cut a yard for. They wouldn't let me use my lawnmower. It wasn't good enough. They had one that weighed about 3 times what mine did. And they wanted every row lined up just perfectly. And they'd go out and look across the horizon to see if you missed any blades of grass. Every now and then I saw a little black-headed girl running around in their yard. She didn't ever speak to me, and I'd never speak to her. That went on for several years. I didn't realize that that little girl was Delaine. The Harleys went to church with them, and when the Bradleys had to be out of town, Delaine stayed with the Harleys. That was like her second set of grandparents. As time went on, he became totally wheelchair-bound. I remember that she'd be at work, and I'd be over there cutting grass, and I'd go in his kitchen, and he'd be sitting in his wheelchair. They had fig trees in the backyard, and he would be cooking figs, getting ready to make preserves all day. He'd just sit at that stove in his wheelchair. And I can see his glasses. They'd get down to here. He had to push them up to talk to you. You know, he's just all bent over and crippled. Well, he loved Braves. He never saw the Braves win a championship. There's a whole section in heaven that never experienced that here on earth. They laughed together. She'd read the Bible to him. And they'd pray together. She always had a smile. We became bedridden. She cared for her husband day and night. No resentment, no feeling of I'm trapped. She made a game out of caregiving. And only she could make him laugh when he was critical. Miss Harley was so faithful to her vows in sickness and in health. Till death do us part. She lived her marriage in second mile style. He died one day. She was taking care of him. She died the day after. And they had a double funeral. Delaney and I have talked about that. You know how the conversation goes? If I die first, you've got to marry again? No way. I'm one and done. I want us to go together. The Harleys taught us how to have a Christian marriage, even with a disabled spouse. And now they're together, perfectly healthy in heaven. What about you? You got your health? You got your livelihood? You got your spouse? Are you willing to build on this foundation? Marriage. Your spouse deserves a marriage in second mile style. And when you live like that, other people will see Jesus in you. We stand right where you are, heads bowed, eyes closed.